Welcome to the Living in Rural Mallorca podcast. Have you ever dreamt of moving abroad for a rural lifestyle on a Mediterranean island? My guests in this series did just that and share their experiences with us. The pleasures and the pitfalls, tips on making the transition, making the most of life in Mallorca and more.
Pine trees galore in our forest, so I go out and start collecting all the cones. And the other thing, they're brilliant firelighters. Not everybody up here had cars at that time, so you'd have to rely on someone else possibly going down that might be able to pick you up. Darling, you're going to have to calm down or you will not survive in Mallorca. It does not work the same.
I'm Jen Edwards, podcast host and author of the Living in Rural Mallorca blog, all about our own experiences of life in a finca since we left England in 2004. My guest in this episode of Living in Rural Mallorca is florist Joanna Walton, whose superb floral creations are in demand for weddings, super yachts and luxury villas on the island. Joanna and her husband, Anthony, who runs a construction company in Mallorca, live in a finca set in idyllic countryside near the attractive town of Artar. Sitting on her covered porch, I put it to her that her rural lifestyle in Mallorca was a world away from what she knew when she owned a group of flower shops in London.
It is very different. I love it. I love it, I have to say. Actually, my mother moved up to Wales when I was 12. I was actually at boarding school most of the time, but when I arrived here 12 years ago now, it reminded me of Wales. It reminded me of the sort of beautiful hills in the background and sort of stunning wildflowers in the spring. And yeah, no, I'm very happy here. I'm not really a city girl, really. I was just in London sort of, you know, as you are when you're sort of late teens, and then got stuck there.
So. Yeah, you've got stuck having a very successful business as a florist.
Yes.
And in fact, you used to do the flowers for the Orient Express, didn't you?
Yes, that's right. We had a few flower shops in London, in Baker Street, Euston Station, and in the end, London Bridge. It sounds a bit like the Monopoly board, doesn't it? All the stations. And that was very, very busy. And I did have three young kids, and I was sort of out of the house 14 hours a day and sort of made up my mind after a divorce that, right, that's it, I've got to stop all this. Got rid of the shops in London and went back to, I was actually living in Buckinghamshire and started working from my garage and thought I need to get some contracts and get some regular stuff. And it's one of those things, it's always not, you know, what you know, but who you know. My nanny, who was helping out, a lovely old lady, her daughter worked for the Orient Express. And so she said, oh, they're looking for someone to do their flowers. And that was just fantastic. For a few years, I had the contract to do all the flowers on the Pullman train. And so all the little bud vases on the tables, and you could order bouquets and bouquets of roses. It was always a special occasion, really, if you're on the Orient Express. So it was a lovely, lovely one to have.
Yeah, very lovely. You do have some interesting work here. We'll talk a little bit about that later on. I'm curious to know why you decided to come to Mallorca, and in particular, rural Mallorca.
Rural Mallorca. Oh, well, I'll have to try and make this, compact it into a short story. I originally came here when I was 19 with my then boyfriend. We spent the summer up here. His brother was in Cala Rajada, so we'd been up here. Spent the summer here for a few months, and he decided to stay. I was 19 and thought, actually, everything's going on in London and that's where my mates are. And so I went back to London. Long story short, I got married, had three children, got divorced. And my boyfriend, my then boyfriend, is now my second husband, who was one of my brother's best friends. So I kept in contact with him at my brother's wedding and 30th and 40th and birthday parties. We got back in touch and he came over to England and said, right, I think you should come to Mallorca. So I had a 20-year gap, basically. And then, so after 20 years, I thought, oh, yes, maybe that is the right place and that's the right man. So I came back to marry Ant and brought my three children with me, who they weren't quite so sure about this little island. I was like, oh, but it's Ant. And they're like, yes, who's that? But yeah, it worked out really, really well. We put them into an international school in Marachi, and the youngest one went into Spanish school. And it worked out really, really well. I'm very happy to be here.
20-year gap. Did you notice a lot of changes?
Oh, yes. I remember, when you flew in and then had to drive up to Cala Rajada, I mean, that took, I can't really remember, this is 30 odd years ago. It took about 2.5 hour drive, or, you know, there wasn't that main dual carriageway. It was little roads, and not everybody up here had cars at that time. So you'd have to rely on someone else possibly going down that might be able to pick you up. And I remember that Kalarajada, I remember when I was surprised when I was 19, how German it was. You know, a lot of the menus outside, you see the restaurants were all in German. And I think it's now a bit, it is still, there's a lot of German people living here, but it is a bit more cosmopolitan now. I think there's quite a mix. I think, you know, I've even noticed in the last 12 years in Arta, gradually the locals are more and more open, I think, to, yes, to having
to
us
be,
here.
They
have to be.
Yeah, there
right.
are a lot of international people yeah. in Arta now.
Yeah.
You didn't have quite the same experience as some people who come to Mallorca and spend a lot of time looking for a rural property. You didn't have to go no. through that, did
no.
you?
No. Very luckily, Ant is actually a builder. So he came here when he was 21 and built his brother's girlfriend's house, and that's how he started. And in those days, I don't think they knew very much about what they were doing. They used to go to the library, you know, pre-internet, and go and get books, and couldn't afford scaffolding, so there were lots of pulley ropes and buckets, and, you know, and that's where he started. And I have to say, the house is still standing and it's very beautiful. That's the original one he built. But then he came across this piece of land and with a little sort of derelict property on it, and thought that he would do it up and sell it, but in fact he couldn't bear to part with it. So I think that must be, gosh, I found out from him late 28 years ago or something. So yes, it was already here, so I was very lucky to be able to walk into this beautiful environment.
It certainly is very beautiful indeed. It's sort of along a track, so you haven't got lots of traffic passing,
no.
which is a bonus for sure.
All you hear is the sheep bells. Mm. So in lockdown, that was sort of about all that I heard. There was literally no cars coming up at all, and just the sheep bells.
It's been very
as you
quiet.
Can hear now, it's literally just the birds in
yeah.
the background.
And the dogs.
Yeah.
You've got a few dogs.
A few dogs and a couple of cats, yeah.
Perfect when you're living in the countryside.
Yeah.
So you moved into something that would have been very different, I imagine, from what you were living in Buckinghamshire.
Yes.
What were the challenges for you of moving into a rustic finca house?
Oh my goodness, the challenges of moving to Mallorca full stop, really. I mean, it was quite funny because I'd been a single mum for a while running my businesses in London and used to getting things done, you know. So I struggled obviously a bit with the language, you know, moving here, not speaking a word of Spanish. So that was a challenge. And then having to rely on my new husband to sort things out for me was a bit of a challenge. And then going to things like the PAC, which is the local medical centre. And usually if you go there, you're ill or one of your children's ill, and the stress. And I remember the receptionist sort of shouting at me because she might, you know, as one does sometimes when you're just thinking someone might understand you better if you shout at them. And I was sort of nearly tearful. And then the whole thing became so complicated. I had to say to Aunt, can you come and help me? And I was so cross. I was just so cross. I was like, for goodness sake, I mean, I've filled in these forms. I've done this and I've done that. He almost had to shake me by the shoulders and say, darling, you're going to have to calm down or you will not survive in Mallorca. It does not work the same, you know. Mm. In terms of the house, I remember one of the things was my daughter wrapped up in a towel going to have a bath. Out she comes and says, there's no hot water, Mummy. And I said, oh gosh, the gas must have run out. She said, what do you mean the gas has run out? You know, that doesn't happen in England. There is permanently gas in the pipes. No, darling, it comes in a big bottle here. So if the bottle's run out of gas, we've got to get some more. So that, you know, to them was just completely bizarre.
Yes, I can imagine.
And the internet.
Yes.
So bringing two then teenagers,
oh,
and there was no internet. And, you know, they desperately wanted to keep in touch with their friends in England, of course. You know, Mummy's dragged them away, and then they can't communicate with anyone. And this went on for about 3 months. And we had a dongle, you know, which is like one internet connection. You put in one laptop. So there had to be a rota with the older two as to who'd had it for an hour. And, that, you know, you can imagine the arguments. I think the original problem with getting the Wi-Fi was because they'd written Ant's NIE number down incorrectly. So the computer just kept throwing it out, but we couldn't work out why or what was going on. It took us 3 months to even begin to get it installed. So that was a challenge for the kids, really. And it's cold, you know, that in the winter.
Mm.
It's a farmhouse. It's a beautiful old thick-walled farmhouse, which is built to keep the heat out. But in the winter, it is, I wasn't used to that. And I expected it, as I think a lot of people do, that it's going to be warm all year round. And it's not in sort of February, March, isn't it?
No.
It's after Las Camas.
Yeah, even on a nice warm day in the winter,
yeah.
or a comparatively warm day, when you go indoors,
yeah.
you feel the temperature.
Oh, this time of year, for sure. I mean, mean, it's much better to get outside in the morning. I'm sort of like, oh, putting on jumpers. You go into the village and it's like, why have I got all these clothes on? Because it's a house. And I think it's a different thing to England. I think England is a sort of crisp air in the winter and you put on clothes and light the fire. Here, it's a slightly sort of damp, humid that can get in your bones. So, yes, I think people should beware of that when they, you know, they don't know Mallorca in the wintertime.
Yes, I remember losing a whole shoe cupboard full of shoes that went mouldy.
Yeah, definitely.
So it is a surprise because people do assume that it's lovely here all the time.
Yeah, it's the humidity, isn't it?
Yes, it is. You also have a very impressive collection of solar panels, which makes the house look minuscule. How have you adapted to using solar power?
Well, I love reading your blogs because it really does remind me of my life, you know. Like, oh, can't put the dishwasher on, the sun's not out. I mean, you know, these are things that people don't think of. And I mean, now, thank goodness, we've literally just put in the last bank a few months ago. And we're kind of, wow, we're there. But I mean, we found a photograph of Ant when he was probably 28 with his first solar panel. And he's got long blonde hair, you know, looking quite hippie, proudly standing next to the solar panel, which had cost him an arm and a leg. And now they've come down a lot in price. Obviously, he's in the business. You know, he can get good prices and knows people. So it's much cheaper to do this. So the solar panels charge up the batteries. When there's no sun, then the batteries are running, operating the system. When the batteries run out, that's when the generator kicks on. And all being well, but as we know, that doesn't always happen. The generator doesn't always kick on, you know. And then you're in the middle of nowhere, you just suddenly plunge into pitch black, you know, like walking around with torches trying to start the generator. It is a good way to live, really, that we only use the appliances that we need when there is sun. I mean, obviously not all year round, but most of the time. So the washing machine, the ones that drain it the most, I'm sure you know, the kettle, the microwave, the fan oven.
And a very good hairdryer.
Exactly. So it is. It's just another way. I'm enjoying it, really, that we can try and use as much solar power as we possibly can and live like that, really. Yeah, but, you know, the really dirty dishwasher at the end of the night, just, oh, bung that on. Oh, no, I can't.
Yeah.
You know, and you have to wait till the morning. But it's not that hard. And we've also got separate solar for the hot water.
Ah, no more gas bottles.
Well, no, we do have the gas bottles. That's the heating. So that's the heating. So we don't touch those in the summer, really. And we've now put in a new log burner. So we're getting there that we're going to be using less and less. But the solar can actually heat the water pretty much in the winter as well. And I do love a bath. So I know there's the water side, but I'd feel less guilty that if the hot water's coming from the sun, it does make me feel a bit better.
And we do get about 300 days of sunshine a year, apparently. So it seems crazy not to be able to take advantage of it.
Exactly.
I think it's a scary thing. We just assumed we would be able to connect to the mains when we bought our place.
Oh, did you?
Before so it was a bit of a shock to find out we couldn't.
No way we could. Or electricity. No, no. Electricity or gas.
No, it's not a pylon or anything to be seen around here. No. Which makes it even better, actually.
It does, doesn't it?
You've got quite a lot of land here. Do you grow things? Have you got produce that you grow?
No, not... I mean, the one thing we do have, the sun behind us there, the fig trees look a bit weird at the moment, just up there, because all the leaves have blown off, and you can see these figs on the end of the branches that look
ghostly.
A bit weird. Yeah, but we still got some figs. I made some chutney last Saturday. We have about 25 fig trees, so we do have a surplus of figs. And then this year, because of lockdown, because I had more time, I did have a veggie patch, which I've done one year before, but found it rather time consuming when you're working, mainly because the summer's so hot and you do have to water unless you get your husband to put in a water irrigation, which didn't seem to happen. So I was watering every night. So this year I did, you know, grow tomatoes, courgettes, cauliflower, broccoli, beans.
Fantastic.
Which is fun, but it's a lot of water and a lot of time. And we do have a lot of lovely produce here. So I'm a little bit torn. I don't know, some of your listeners might not like that, but I think it's wonderful to go and pick them up from the garden. A lot of water. I don't know how sustainable, because if they're growing these vegetables on a much grander, bigger scale, I don't know.
Sometimes I think it's possibly cheaper to buy them from a farm shop.
That's what I mean. That's what I mean. Unless you're actually growing something like pak choi or something that's hard to get. But, you know, we've got a surplus of wonderful tomatoes in the sort of Coalimento or Cooperativa. So, you know, you do wonder. But it was fun. It was nice to learn.
You mentioned water. Where does your water come from?
From a well. So we had to dig down and, yes, the water comes up from the well. So that seems, we seem to have a very good supply, which is great. Then we do have things like the well pump breaks. And then you have the water pump breaks.
No flushing the toilet.
Yeah, exactly. So the well pump seems to be in a, it seems to happen sort of every year for 4 years, and touch wood, it's been okay at the moment. But I love the stories of Ant going out. The first thing they do when they go to a building site is to find the water. That's the first, so the divining for water. And there is a guy that literally comes out with his little divining sticks, and they find the water source.
Amazing.
And then they just have to go down, I don't know, long, long way down. But he's just done a site recently where they'll be starting. And it's the first time, he said, in 25 years of building here, that they didn't hit the water where they thought they would. And that, you know, I suppose it must happen. And the guy was, they were putting cement down to try and sort of get through the ground, the loose ground, and make it firmer, but they still didn't hit.
Oh dear.
But normally, I think they're pretty successful in finding, which is quite incredible, isn't it?
It is, yes. We have a well, but it's very old and it's inaccessible, basically.
Oh, really?
I don't know why somebody put it halfway down the valley.
Oh.
It's not really somewhere we're going to go and
pull
for water. So
no.
Ours comes in a lorry.
Oh, in a lorry. Yes, I see that in some of the townhouses, the water gets delivered into the well in the house, is it?
Yes.
I've seen that in Snow, yeah, which is, yeah, delivered into their own well, but yeah.
Rural life is very different, isn't it,
yeah.
In Mallorca?
Yeah. I love it. I do love it.
What's the best thing you like about being here in the countryside and in this beautiful environment?
Well, obviously, it's very nice to wake up to in the morning. It's very peaceful. I really struggle if I go somewhere now and have to sleep and I can hear traffic noise and anything like that. And with the dogs, I literally walk out. There's a track. We're on a track and I keep walking up the track and you can wind your way up towards Betlem. And there's one absolutely my favourite part of the walk where you just look down over the sort of valley. And I've said to my husband and my kids, right, this is where I want my ashes scattered. You know, it sounds rather macabre, but it is just so beautiful. It's really uplifting. And I think, you know, this sort of year has been a bit sort of stressful for a lot of us. And you think, oh, what am I going to do? But actually, just getting out, going to have a walk, green exercise, and no matter how miserable I'm feeling, I will always feel better when I come back. It's really, we're very, very lucky, and I do feel very lucky. And this year, I mean, the wildflowers. And I'm not sure if there were more wildflowers this year or that I had more time to enjoy them. So I don't know if you saw, I did a few videos of flower arranging with some of the wildflowers.
Yes, I did, actually. In fact, I was inspired to do one, which I put on Instagram.
That thrills me. Yes, so I did see that.
We will mention your Instagram at the end because it's well worth keeping an eye on it.
Yeah.
And although this year has been a very difficult year for many businesses, particularly those in the wedding sector,
there's
such a beautiful place to get married.
Yes.
And I imagine so many disappointed brides-to-be this year.
Yeah.
But hopefully 2021 will be a bit better.
Yes.
And so it's well worth having a look at your Instagram.
Yeah.
Because plan ahead.
Yes. Well, I mean, we had 51 cancelled weddings and 38 have postponed. And then we've had some new inquiries. So next year we're almost full, actually.
That's good.
We're nearly full.
Enjoy the rest then.
Yes. You know, it's everybody. It's makeup artists, hairdressers, it's caterers. I mean, photographers, videographers. There's a huge amount of people in Mallorca that really actually weren't looked after either. We, you know, because we are part-time workers, really. I mean, I work from May till October normally. So there's no help coming our way. And it's been really, really tough for a lot of people. And of course, the brides. And most of them have been pretty sort of, you know, resolute about it and postponed, and we're just fingers crossed. I don't know if it'll be a vaccine or what it'll be, but that we all go smoothly next year, because
let's hope so. We
all need that, don't we?
Yeah, we do. But I think looking at your Instagram is a very good way to see what you can do, because I haven't seen any other floral displays like yours on the island. You have a certain elegance and style in
lovely,
your...
Lovely, thank you.
And I think it's lovely that you did some videos to share techniques,
because
if anybody wanted flowers, I'd just plonk them into a vase. but now I look rather differently at flowers and how I arrange
them. I mean, there was a thing in the lockdown with the videos. I wanted to be very, very careful, because we're very fortunate to live in this lovely place and have all this land around us, and I appreciate that people were in apartments and just not so well off. And so it was a bit of a sort of, I was thinking about it and I thought, but I want to share, I want to bring some colour into other people's lives. And, you know, on the sort of Mallorca lockdown group, they got a wonderful response, which encouraged me to keep doing them. So mindful of what a fortunate position I am to be in, it was quite fun. And literally just picking wildflowers and leaves that I was sort of, I was saying, you know, on your way to the supermarket, perhaps you can find, you know, down an alleyway. And it was so sweet because a lot of people did tag me and in what they created and said they were inspired, you know, as I was also with people doing yoga and some of the artists. And I think it's a really important time, you know, for us to sort of share anything that we can to make each other keep going and feeling stronger.
Yes, it was a very tricky time, that lockdown.
Exactly.
Because of your interest in flowers, do you actually grow flowers as well?
Well, the funny thing is, people, I remember years ago, someone saying, oh, I'll introduce you to so-and-so, he's a landscape gardener, you'll get on. And I'm like, I'm not a gardener. most of my flowers arrive cut in a box or maybe a bucket, and I arrange and do nice things with them. So in fact, my husband's a better gardener than me, believe it or not. The front of the house, we've got some old-fashioned English roses mixed in with the bamboo that always makes makes me laugh. And also when I work in the summer, it is pretty full on. And as I say, everything's hot and everything is watering. So I'm not very good at growing flowers. I have a herb garden. We've got lots of lavender, rosemary. And this year, actually, a friend was in lockdown. A new friend actually turned up in Arta and she gave me lots of seeds and we did asters. And so I did more this year than I've ever done and really enjoyed it. And just thought, actually, it would be kind of quite nice after sort of 30 years of being in the business to work a little less and maybe do a bit more of the gardening side. I find that really interesting.
Yes.
But I mean, things grow very quickly here, so we're lucky in Mallorca. I remember my husband sort of cutting down shrubs and, you know, I'm going, what are you doing? And then sure enough, in the spring, they've all perked back up again. It's quite amazing.
People who don't know Mallorca very well but think of it as being a very hot place probably wonder where you get the flowers for all your displays, not just for brides, but you also do displays for super yachts and villas and things.
Exactly. Yes, super yachts. Yes, that's a fantastic business as well. It's funny because I'd love to be able to source everything in Mallorca, really. And I was sort of with my wildflowers and stuff, I was so enjoying that. And the hashtag, you know, foraging florist, I thought was quite cool. Unfortunately, I can't get everything that I need here for the sort of super yacht clients and the weddings. They do grow a certain amount of flowers on the island, and I'm loving sort of investigating more and more what I can get here. But the really sort of beautiful roses, garden roses, the hydrangeas, and a certain quality that my clients need or want come from Holland. So it's exactly the same as when I had my flower shops in London. We're importing the flowers from Holland, and they come through a wholesaler here in Mallorca, so I'm not cutting out the middleman. And we struggle with the language. I learned all the colours and quantities quite quickly, you know, 50 stems of this, but I was struggling with the quality and getting the actual, and he kept saying, oh, muy caro, muy caro, you know, everything's expensive, what I was wanting. I wanted a 2-metre-tall rose. I don't want a 30-centimetre-tall. Oh, muy caro. No, no, it's fine. My clients will pay. I just need to have the good quality. So I actually now talk to them direct at the auction in Holland, and I can ring up. I can see the pictures. I can see what's there. And if I'm not sure about something or they haven't got something, I ring them up. It takes 2 minutes, you know, obviously and they speak English and it's all easy, and they come over. So I can order on a Monday and they arrive here Thursday. So they come from Barcelona on the ferry Wednesday night and arrive on the island Thursday, or I order Thursday, Friday morning, and they'll come Monday.
And you presumably have to go to Palma to collect them. I can't imagine DHL ever finding this place.
Well, it's funny enough, actually. I mean, I've always had a florist employed who's been working in Palma. So it's much easier for them to go to the yachts, pick up the vases, collect the flowers and everything. They do a delivery from the wholesaler here on a Monday and Thursday. But it sort of can be any time up to one, you know. So when you're waiting for your flowers, which are perishable, and you're desperate to get them into water and start arranging, sometimes it's easier to pick them up. But I have to say, they are very good. They will find me here as well.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah, I know.
How do you think rural life in Mallorca has changed you as a person?
Oh, Oh, interesting question. I think a lot more contented, I would say. As I say, you know, if ever you're not feeling right, just get out there and go for a walk. And I find now, I mean, my children live in London, but I do find London quite stressful when I go back now. I find it quite a contrast, and I don't want to get on a tube. I don't really want to go down there. I'd rather go on a bus or walk. And 3 or 4 days in London is enough. We're just not used to being surrounded by people all the time. I mean, even a traffic jam going into Palmer sort of throws us a bit because we're not quite used to traffic either. So I would say that definitely, yeah, a lot more peaceful and appreciating nature more and trying to live in the most sustainable way here that we can, really. We've just taken out a massive fireplace, which I adored, but we put in a little log burner, which is super, super more efficient and putting less pollution into the air. So I think, yeah, when you live somewhere like this in rural Mallorca, you really need to know how to look after it, I think, yes. and do the best you can.
And it does change you to a certain extent,
yes,
doesn't it?
Yes, definitely does, definitely.
Yeah. I don't buy as many things as I used
to. No, definitely not, and don't keep up with fashion. I'm not rushing out to the shops to get the latest dress. I'm just, yeah, it's interesting, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Well, you live in the Artar area, mm-hmm. in the northeast of Mallorca, which I think is probably one of the loveliest parts of the
Me
island.
Too.
And it's really not that well known
no.
with a lot of people.
Shall we not say any more about it?
Maybe
then?
We
should keep it that way.
Yeah, it's just nothing here. Really.
Yeah, exactly.
What do you most like about living in this area?
It is changing, even the 12 years I've been here. I mean, I could actually happily go shopping, as I was talking about in Artar. I could go and buy some boots, I could buy some dresses, some nice jewellery. It is becoming more cosmopolitan. The restaurants have got better. You know, I remember 5, 6 years ago when the Indian restaurant arrived, I was so excited. You know, the beaches to me are beautiful, northeast of the island. Cala Torta, Cala Guilla. Really stunning. And I know that everyone from every own part of their island will probably think that they're in the best part. I mean, down south is beautiful as well, but it is quite unspoiled here. And if I'm working really hard and I'm down in Andratx, or I could be Soller or Dea, we go all over the island, I feel like I'm sort of coming home when yes. I sort of come past Manacor. Unfortunately, the dual carriage runs out, so you can get onto that little road. And then just coming down the track, you just think, oh, this is my, you know, and then the dogs come bounding down to the gate and you're like, oh, I'm home. And it doesn't really matter how stressed you've been or whatever. It's just lovely and calming.
Take a deep breath.
I do love it. I think initially when I moved here with the children, I was sort of talking to my husband about, we rented a house in Seneo for a while so that they could get to school. And I was saying, I really think we should live in the middle of the island, because Seneo was sort of 20, 25 minutes from anywhere. And I was very much sort of pushing for that for the first few years. I think because the children didn't really want to be here, you can imagine. But I'm glad actually that my husband didn't listen to me and that we're still here.
It is, it's really lovely.
Yeah.
Any disadvantages, do you think, to being in this area?
I mean, simple things. I miss the cinema. I love going to the cinema. In London or Buckinghamshire or whatever, I'd love a bit of popcorn, going sitting in the cinema. And I do go down. If I've got something to do, I've got a couple of girlfriends in Palma pre-lockdown. We'd go in the afternoon to the matinees and go and watch an English film or something. I love that. And just a bit more culture. And you do feel a little bit cut off. You see sort of social things going on. I don't know, Binisalem, or, you know, you've got to drive to go and do things. And there's some fabulous restaurants in Palma as well that I feel we're lacking slightly. I'm a vegetarian, so vegetarian, you know, or a vegan restaurant would be nice up here. So I do miss that for sure. And some friends that are down there. But it's not that far, but you do just get a bit stuck, don't you, in your own, oh, this is my area.
Yes, but I think some people have this sort of developed islanditis.
Yes, island mentality, that everything's too far away. And it really isn't. It's only an hour, isn't it?
Yes,
down
it is.
Palma, well, less for you, but from here. I mean, get to the wholesalers in 50 minutes, so
that's not too bad,
is it?
For anybody who's thinking about moving to rural Mallorca, what would your advice be? Do you have some top tips?
Oh, dear. Well, I obviously, luckily, you know, Anthony was already here and you know, established. I think you need to spend some time. If you come over on holiday, you think, oh, that's lovely, I'm going to live there. You need to spend a bit more time than that. And as I say, see what the winter months are like and whether that agrees with you. I think you've got to have a really good HESTOR, which is the accountant / legal advisor, looking into property. There's a lot of sort of properties with the legal bits and pieces, which is quite normal, but you need to make sure that everything checks out. The paperwork is enormous, isn't it?
It is.
And you can suddenly discover that whilst you're trying to do something, I don't know, put a solar panel in, but you don't have this piece of paper, the Finanza de Obras, that says the house is, you know, properly written off, and you've got to be very careful. So I think if you're buying a property, is to get really good advice, check that all the paperwork absolutely checks out and the boundaries, and, you know, you do hear horror stories of people coming unstuck. And that's important, isn't it?
It certainly is.
Yeah.
You talked about the Hestor there. Obviously, for anybody who wants to come and start a business, and I do feel that there is a huge entrepreneurial spirit here.
Yes.
People come here and they start businesses that are not related to what they used to do.
Yes.
You started a business that was very similar to the one you had in London.
Yes.
But how complicated was it setting up and running a business?
I must say that networking on the island is fantastic. I mean, I moved here and had been here a year. I was thinking, what am I going to do? And obviously I wanted to settle the children in and a new way of life for us all. But after a year, I was really missing the flowers and thought, I really want to do that here. What am I, you know, I need to get going. And very quickly, I mean, through ABC and networking groups and lunches, I think it was easy to get established, you know. And I think if you on a small island like this, if you do something well, people will talk about you, whether it's restaurants or whatever business it is. And certainly with the yacht industry, that's very sort of, you know, word of mouth. There were some fantastic wedding planners, you know, here that I sort of got to know quite quickly. So that side of it, I found, took off really well. And obviously now, which we had less of them, is Instagram and hashtag Majorca and new businesses. There really are a lot of entrepreneurial women and men on the island. It's been a fantastic place to come and start off something. Obviously, again, do your market research and see what a call and what, and, you know, what need there is for whatever you're going to do. People do obviously come and set up and it doesn't work out. But I think if you put yourself out there and you're open to meeting people and working quite hard, that's the easy side. I think the sort of bureaucratic side is a bit more complicated. Paperwork, again, just having a good Hestor to advise you. I think it's really, really, really important. This is one of my big things, to pay your taxes here.
Yes.
I really think, you know, that people that sort of come here and keep their VAT numbers in England and is not the way to go. That's one of my little bugbears, is that if you're going to live here and appreciate the island, then you must pay your taxes and you must pay back into the island. So I pay my autonomo, you know, which is like your social security, every month that I'm working. And, you know, I've been very fortunate in having medical help here, which has been fantastic. So, and my son's been at a local school. So my husband and I pay our taxes. We employ people. And I just think that is really, really important.
So you're making a contribution to the island.
Go and talk to your Hestor, find out what you need to do and try and make sense of it all.
Well, you've obviously made sense of it all. I think if anybody is thinking about coming over here, maybe renting a villa and they want some lovely flowers while they're there, or they're getting married, or they're lucky enough to have a yacht.
Yes.
Oh, well,
a yacht, I know. I'd be quite happy with the little tenders that they have on the yacht, you know, the little boat that comes out. And I look at them and go, oh, I'd be quite happy with that.
With a little bunch of flowers on the front.
Exactly.
Well, at least they keep wet.
Yeah.
So if anybody would like to see what you do, your work, with perhaps the dream of coming here, how can they find out more about you and see some of your beautiful photographs?
On Instagram, we are Joanna Walton Flowers Majorca. That's a bit of a mouthful, but it seemed to get everything in. So, yes, my business name is Joanna Walton, so I've kept my name, which is what I had in England as well. So the website is joannawalton.com. And Facebook, Joanna Walton Flowers, so all quite straightforward. On Instagram, obviously, when I was working and doing weddings every day, I was putting up a lot more pictures than I have been now, but I'm trying to keep on top of it. And, you know, there's the sort of more natural sort of nature shots and things which people seem to enjoy as well.
Yes. Well, it's a good way to see what you do. And, of course, some of those videos are still there.
Yes, they're still there on IGTV. It's funny, the people that contacted me, you know, like a distant cousin, going, oh, it's so lovely to see you. And then actually finding out we have things in common, that we both love jugs. You know, we both, yeah, a collection of jugs to put our flowers in. And, you know, it was quite fun.
And will there be something for Christmas?
I think I will have to do something for Christmas, won't I? As it doesn't look like I'll be going anywhere. So I think, yes, definitely. I usually try and do lots of homemade things at Christmas. We have pine trees galore in our forest, so I go out and start collecting all the cones. And the other thing, they're brilliant firelighters. Cones,
oh, really?
The pine cones, so there's a natural firelighter. If you keep them, get them really nice and dry, so I usually collect a bag, lay them near the log burner so they dry out, and we find them brilliant firelighters. There's a little tip.
That's a very good tip.
Living.
It is indeed. Well, thank you so much for your time. It's been wonderful. I mean, the journey here was breathtaking.
Thank you for coming and finding us in the middle of nowhere.
Finding you was not as difficult as I thought it would be, to be honest.
Yeah, it's quite easy now, isn't it, with WhatsApp pins, where, you know, imagine in the old days.
Yes, it
left
is.
Left at the broken gatepost and right by the olive tree.
And then someone's chopped the olive tree
down. Exactly. Well, thank you for coming. It's lovely to see
you. No, it's been lovely to be here. And thank you very much, Joanna Walton, for being on the Living in Rural Mallorca podcast.
You're very welcome.
You've been listening to me, Jan Edwards, in conversation with Joanna Walton, who moved from England to Mallorca for a new life in the countryside. Joanna is a renowned florist on the island, and you can see examples of her floral artistry on her website, joannawalton.com, and on her Instagram account, Joanna Walton Flowers Mallorca. You'll also find her on Facebook as Joanna Walton Flowers. If you'd like to read about our own experiences of a finca home in the Mallorcan countryside, then take a look at my blog, livinginruralmallorca.com. Thank you for listening to this podcast, and if you enjoyed it, I hope you'll subscribe to hear more expats talking about their experiences. Until next time, it's goodbye from the beautiful island of Mallorca. Living in Rural Mallorca is produced and presented by me, Jan Edwards. The theme tune was composed by Jack Waldenmeyer and published by Music Bakery Publishing.